Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to The Exchange. This is Cheryl Castile. My guests in the studio today, Stephen Cooper and Sarah Michaela Brown, are both involved in theater, in education, in arts administration. Stephen Cooper is an actor, writer, educator, and a teaching artist. He teaches fight. He's a fight choreographer. Stephen received his degree in theater with a minor in philosophy. And you know, Stephen, when I read that, I was like, okay, now I get it. From Northwestern State University, which gives you guys another connection with the Chicago thing. Following college.
The Northwestern in Natchitoches, Louisiana, not the Northwestern in Chicago.
Oh, I wanted to go with the Chicago thing.
State.
Oh, yeah, Northwestern State versus Northwestern. All right. That's a cool place, too.
It is. And
then following college, Stephen worked in a number of regional theater companies throughout New York, Maine, Ohio, Florida, and Alaska. He's been seen recently here in the area in 12 Angry Men, which you were fabulous. You've got Hate Mail, which I didn't get to see. We All Do, which you were – was an incredible production, Dracula. And Stephen also teaches theater arts through the Talented Theater Program here with the Lafayette Parish School System, has also been involved in film. And what I forgot was his involvement in music. Sarah Michaela Brown is a actor in theater and improv. She's also an arts administrator and has accomplished a lot thus far in her life. She's been with PASA here in Lafayette as their development director, and now since there's been the merger with the Acadiana Center for the Arts, Sarah will continue to serve as the development in the development and outreach departments. She is currently a board member and founder of the Chicago Fringe Festival, which is no small feat. She's an ensemble member of Silverback's Improv Theater, which a lot of people knew before as Stage Monkeys, and it's kind of evolved now into Silverback's. And she's been a company member for quite a while for Acting Up in Acadiana. And she was recently seen, and I'm so disappointed I had to miss this one, in Wonderlust Theater's 5x8, which really focused on women.
Correct.
During Women's History Month. So welcome, the two of you.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
And I have to tell you, when I think about you two and what is happening in this area and what has been happening for quite a while in the arts, I just get even like more excited because just you two people come in with such incredible background and talent. And what blows me away so much about this area, especially in the United States, in this town, is that there are so many multi-talented folks here. You know, we're not – and what you do, Sarah, is – and I want to talk some about that in just a little bit. But what you do with the whole balancing act of being a performer, an artist, and an administrator –
right.
That's not always an easy thing to do. And so we're going to come back and talk about that. The first thing I like to do, though, when people are here on the program for the first time is to find out a bit about when did the arts come into your life? Like, when was there a realization? And it might not have been theater. You know, you two are very focused on theater now, but it might have been another art form. You want to start out, Stephen?
Yeah. for me, writing poetry was where it started. I haven't grown since I was in like 8th or 9th grade, so they gave me a basketball.
You mean height-wise?
Height-wise.
Which is better than emotionally.
Yes, exactly. I've grown a little emotionally, I would hope.
Yeah, I mean, because you're tall.
Yeah.
Yeah, you shot up pretty – okay.
Yeah, so I grew up playing basketball, and it was – and I wrote a lot. My senior year, I did speech
Where was this?
I grew up in Lake Charles, Louisiana.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I did speech team my senior year, which I kind of got a little bite on the acting bug. But then I went to college in electrical engineering, and then I was in business management, and then I was in creative writing. And then on a whim, I was driving by the Lake Charles Little Theater, and I stuck my head in and asked when they had tryouts. And James, the director, came running up and he was like, "Do you play cards?" I said, "Yes." He was like, "Do you drink beer?" I was like, "Yes." He was like, "Do you want a part?" And I was like, "Sure." And their Pablo in Streetcar Named Desire had dropped out that day. And so I showed up that night and was in a show. And when I went back to LSU at that point, I switched my major to theater. And that's
kind of how I started
the journey.
Driving by the what do you think it was? I mean, because you hadn't participated in theater as a young kid.
I hadn't.
Right?
It was always something I had wanted to try.
Because?
I don't know. I just
what
it was something.
About
it was something I always thought I could be good at, and I'm not exactly sure why.
Yeah.
With the speech team,
there's
I had
a lot
like
of
a little bit of
when you do. in speech.
There are a lot of bad habits that can be learned too, but yeah. In the speech team. But that was like my first exposure to it, and it was just always something I wanted to try. And so yeah, and universe provided. Yeah. I was at rehearsal that night, and that's when I decided to do theater.
And you never look back.
No. Well, and even before that, the summer after my freshman year in college, me and my roommate got a wild hair and drove to Orlando and got jobs at Disney World. And I ended up being the gangster at the Great Movie Ride.
For how long?
I was there for about 3 months.
Yeah.
I started off as a tour guide, and I went and bugged the guy that did the hiring for gangster. I went by his office once a week until finally he was like, look, I'll train you as gangster if you stop coming by here. So – yeah.
The you know Apio Abal.
Yes, I do.
You two, I imagine, have probably had a conversation or two
we
about
have,
Disney.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, very nice.
Yeah.
So then in college, when you got to Northwestern.
Yeah. Well, I took a break from LSU whenever I did get into the theater department there. They've got a graduate program there, so a lot of it was more focused towards the grad students.
Okay.
And at that point, I was taking time off and working and then going back to school. And I got pointed towards Northwestern through a friend. And they offered me a scholarship. And so I went and finished up at Northwestern, which was a good choice.
In theater?
In theater, yeah. And I had taken some classes in Scholars College with Dr. Snowden, is how I ended up with the philosophy minor.
Okay.
Yeah, great classes, like class on Carl Jung and religious philosophies of India and China and existentialism and all that fun stuff.
And how do you think that has affected how you live and what you do as an artist? Because I think artists live as an artist. I think that's a way of life.
Yeah. I think out of – if you're speaking of the philosophy, the one thing that I learned out of that is that I know nothing.
Huh?
Which has been like a nice thing as an artist to try to keep your head on the ground of realizing there's always – nobody knows anything, and there's always somebody out there that knows more than you.
Yeah.
And there's always somebody with more chops than you.
And always a chance. Yeah, always
but,
that chance
But
to
nobody
learn.
Does it the way you do it.
Yeah. That's why, but that's the important piece.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that you can learn, but you learn what fits you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what works best for you.
Yeah.
Interesting. When did music come in?
Well, it started with the poetry, like probably like 97, something like that. I'd like printed up like a book of poetry, and I was opening up for bands in Lake Charles at this place, D'Agostino's, and jumping up with bands and doing poetry on top of it.
Ah, okay.
And somewhere around that point, I picked up a djembe and started playing percussion. And then
yeah, because when I first met you, that's what I remember about was
yeah.
that instrument with you.
Yeah,
and
well,
doing drums. Okay.
Yeah, I had taken about a year and a half off of theater at one point, and just kind of focused on the music. I picked up guitar actually the day Johnny Cash passed away.
Huh.
I was at a friend's house, and he shared that he had heard an interview that the interviewer had asked Johnny Cash what kind of musician he was, and he shared, "I'm not a musician. All I got's three chords and the truth." And
yeah.
I was like, I'm a writer. I can write.
I can do that.
Like, and my friend Bryce gave me a tuner and a chord book, and my roommate let me borrow his couch guitar, and there it began.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. So. How about you, Sarah? When did the arts come into your life?
Well, it's just this bug in me. I've always had this performance thing. Which yeah. maybe makes me sound slightly obnoxious, but
she's not, folks. I'll tell you. Yeah.
Thank you. No, and there's pictures of me at like 3 or 4, and constantly wearing costumes.
Ah.
I had this little collection of costumes, and there was this really horribly distressed little blue cotton dress that I was in like every day, and I don't know what I was, you know, what my thought process was with that. But and then I later got into dancing school. The cute little costumes, little
so
girls.
So who was encouraging of you at that time for the whole costume? Like, let's have these costumes around.
I think my mom and yeah. my dad. I mean, they have a streak of independence about them. And I think they let us kind of explore what we wanted to explore. And
yeah.
Yeah, they didn't. We kind of lived out in the country near Brobridge, too. So I had just this wonderful childhood of like running around in the dirt, wearing this blue cotton dress, yeah. making up stories with my brother.
Yeah.
And throughout elementary school, I went to Catholic school, and I think my earliest performance memories are around Christmas. Each of our classes would get a saint or a Bible story to act out. And I would do that. And I remember
– Do you remember who you were?
I remember one time I volunteered to play God and everyone was shocked that a girl would play God. Yeah. And the teacher was like, absolutely. And
I
was
wonderful.
Like, yes, yes, I do. And oh, and one time I got Eve in fourth grade. And that was
those
like –
Those are two major roles.
Yeah. Eve was a big deal because the – the guy that played Adam was like the guy that all the girls had a crush on. Yeah. I say guy, you know, we're like nine or.
Yeah.
But every, you know, the teacher asks who wants to be Adam, and like the one kid raises his hand, and then who wants to be Eve? And like every girl everybody. In the class, I do. And so I landed
and
that
you got
needy
the coveted role.
Yes. So it's been going on a long time and continued through high school. And I think in high school is when I really started to.
Where'd you go to high school?
I went to the Academy of the Sacred Heart.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yes. And I could have so many things to say about the acting teacher there, arts teacher, Peaches Galino. She just completely helped me so much and really let me to explore that side of myself as a performer and actor.
And what a beautiful space to be
in,
you know, for school. I mean, it's incredible out there.
It's a magical place.
It is.
It really is. And every time I go back, I'm just feel so at peace. And I just love being able to walk the grounds. And it's a special place.
I'm curious, at that age, before you got into college, were you drawn – was it more to be on the stage or were you drawn to any of the, you know, administrative things, any of the backstage kind of
– Yeah, actually, I was thinking about that when you were talking to Stephen because I feel like a lot of the things that I do now, there were clues, you know.
Like what?
So as far as the arts administration thing, I got really into student council starting at about sixth grade. And in eighth grade, I was student body president of St. Leo Seton Elementary School.
Okay.
And I took it very seriously.
Yeah.
And I went on to keep doing student government and leadership and like that kind of thing has always been a part of me too.
Yeah. Because I want to ask you while we're talking about that is – You know, you'll see with a very different way that the brain operates with many artists versus the administrators. And so I'm curious when – because I have artist friends who, you know, and I don't want to say – you know, a number of artists are very good at creating their art, but they're not very good at the marketing part of that. They're not very good at the business end of that. But I have a couple of visual artist friends who – because of what – especially one person, what she has done, what she did for a living for a lot of years has just honed those marketing skills. And she has an incredible balance of that – of the creative side in terms of creating a product, an art piece, and then managing that. And I'm curious for you what that is like. And do you battle? Like, you know, I see like the two things on the –
I mean, it's funny. I think that the best story I can tell about this is I did want to be a performer. You know, I wanted to be an actress. That was my first love. And when I was in Chicago, I guess we'll get to that later, but I lived in Chicago for some time. And I was really involved with this really experimental theater company called Tantalus. And I came in as an actor. I auditioned and, you know, ended up in a show and then was kept doing shows with them. And then I was invited to be like a company member. And then, you know, but I'm such an organized person that, you know, I'm sitting there in meetings and I'm like, well, what about this? And like, what about this? And then, you know, next thing you know, we have to have a managing director and everyone's looking at me like, well, you have to do it.
That's right.
You know, it's like if you're just – I think some of that is just a natural organization thing. And then sometimes other actors don't have that about them, kind of like what you're saying. And they're looking to you
as
like –
Stephen raises his hand.
Right.
Although there's more – you're an educator and you
right.
have
Right. You have to stay organized for that.
Or you've
sure.
worked to get that side of you.
Yes. I do stay organized.
No, but I mean – but you know – But I'm serious for when you switch to becoming a full-time educator also.
I mean there is a level of organization that you have to bring to the game. But there are – I do agree that there are some artists that have an ability with the organization beyond where I do. I have a means of keeping myself organized and keeping my lessons organized. And when I'm working on a project, I'm good at that. If there's one thing I've learned out of the business – is I'm not a great fan of the business and I'm not very good at the business side of it.
Yeah.
I create art very well and there are some things in the business realm of creating art that I do well.
Yeah.
But the majority of it, I'm very happy when there's somebody else there with an aptitude to take care of that end.
Yeah.
Is something I've learned about myself.
Yeah, because it, you know, Sarah, for somebody like you, you're the person that during, especially an initial meeting for some kind of organization, you don't ever want to get up and go to the bathroom because when you come back, you will have been nominated.
Right. You've been voted as board president while you were in the bathroom.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, whether you wanted to be or not.
Yeah.
You know? So how do you, you know, have, I'm wondering, you know, the first question that came to mind when you were talking is, have there been some times roles that you have given up? And I don't think passed on would be the thing, but given up because you saw that there was this need, you know, you kind of gave one for the team, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. I have to be very strategic about when I do theater specifically. And, you know, acting is my first love. It's very special to me. And since I moved back to Lafayette, the only play I've done really is a 5x8.
Yeah.
Because I have to think about the time of year that it comes, what's going on with PASA, now the ACA, what's going on with Fringe,
yeah.
This other big project that I work on. Oh, I did do 2012.
Yes,
that was
that
was like a one night, like a 24-hour play thing. I did do that as well.
Yes, you did.
Yeah. 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 Thank you.
You're welcome.
That was a great project too.
It was.
Yeah, but I have to usually I can do things in the fall or in the spring, and that's the time I can do theater. And no, I do pass on opportunities.
Yeah.
You know, and I have that personality that I would just wish I could do everything and be everything and be an astronaut too. And, you know,
yeah.
But you can't. And I've had to make some hard choices, and I think that is part of this.
Did you have to work on that? You know,
yes.
Because it's much easier sometimes to just take it all on and then get frustrated.
No,
I
work on it constantly.
Yeah.
I've told myself my mantra is always to say no, which is the kind of the opposite thing to what it was like the improvise mantra, yes and.
Mm-hmm.
But personally, pretty much the answer is no until you convince me otherwise.
Yeah.
Because I have a full plate.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
That sounds terrible, but
it's honest.
But I'm honest, but I am convinced often to take on extra things, but the flip side of that and the good part is that when I am involved in a project, I am 100% committed, 100% excited about it, really happy to be there. I'm going to give everything I got.
Yeah.
I don't do it. I can't handle doing things halfway because it doesn't suit me.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't make me feel good.
Yeah.
When I do something, I want to be there, committed, present. So I turn things down so that the projects I can work on, I can be that way.
So let's talk about not doing something halfway, which mm-hmm. is when you got involved. For people that don't, before we talk about the Chicago Fringe Festival, for people that aren't familiar with what the Fringe Festivals are, can you give a mm-hmm. little bit of a description, an explanation
Absolutely.
Of those?
Yes. The first Fringe Festival was in 1947 in Edinburgh, and it was in Edinburgh, Scotland, which is now still the biggest Fringe Festival in the world. It's pretty much the whole month of August, and it was a reaction after World War II. They had an arts festival that they were trying to, you know, promote peace and artistic exchange, and some artists weren't invited to that participate in that festival. So they then set up on the fringes, quote unquote, of this festival, and then that kind of became the name of it, the Fringe Festival, which has now surpassed the original festival. So since then, the fringe concept has spread all over the world.
Where was
Canada,
the first
Australia.
Place in the United States?
The first place in the United States was Orlando. Orlando has the oldest fringe.
Yeah. Okay.
Minnesota Fringe was soon after, and they've been popping up in more frequency the last several years. The concept's been popularized in the United States. And the closest one to here is New Orleans Fringe, which is in New Orleans in November.
Now, so you got involved in I'm curious, before we get into the Chicago Fringe, what took you to Chicago in the first place?
I moved to Chicago after I graduated from UL, and that was kind of where my group of friends was headed, you know? It was kind of like Chicago or New York, I think it was kind of where I wanted to be. But I think I started thinking of Chicago probably as early as freshman year of college. And
because? Why was that the destination?
I liked that it was more accessible than New York, and also the kinds of work that were going on there seemed a little more experimental.
With theater. Improv? Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, yes.
Yeah.
Theater and improv, and Chicago is the home of improv, which in college I was doing improv, so that was certainly – I wanted to go do some training in improv. That was on the table. And yeah, I just have always been, since I've started coming to my own as a theater artist, I've been interested in experimental work. That's what I love. So Chicago was a perfect place to be for that.
And so you get there.
Mm-hmm.
And how long did you live there before you decided? Because the Chicago Fringe started in 2009?
Yeah. Well, okay. Our first festival was 2010.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So how did you decide? Because bringing together something like that's a big,
yeah,
a big undertaking.
Yeah. Only someone in their 20s would do that.
Yeah. No, but you know,
because I look back
point.
Now and I'm like, I would never do that now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But that's what people in their 20s are good for, just like taking a huge risk. And
that's right. That's right.
That's great. let's see. I had been working in Chicago for about 6 years at that point, and I've mentioned the Wildly Experimental Theater Group I was involved with, Tantalus. And we took this show called Dreadful Penny's Exquisite Horrors to the New York Fringe and to Minnesota Fringe. And I was just really enthralled with it, and I just thought it was so neat just seeing all these different companies and this just buffet of experiences. And I'm thinking to myself, like, it's so weird that Chicago doesn't have a Fringe. Isn't that weird, you know? And yeah, just kind of like thinking about that. And I kind of started poking around and asking questions to other festivals. Like, the Minnesota Fringe was a big help to me when I was starting Chicago Fringe. And they were like, so many people have said that they're going to start the Chicago Fringe. Whatever. We're going to believe it when we see it. And I'm like, okay, well,
yeah, watch this.
Watch this happen. Yeah. So, I just started thinking about it, and
that was about what year?
That was like December 2008. I bought the domains.
Ah, okay.
I started a blog. I started asking questions. I started doing a little bit of roundtable discussions with the theater community about what we would want our Fringe to look like. And it was really the most remarkable process because I don't know if I'll ever experience something like this again, because the Chicago Fringe is, it as far as the people that operate it, it's administrative work. Mm-hmm. There's no performing going on. Like, we are an administrative staff, all volunteer at this point.
Yeah.
And people were just coming out of the woodworks that I had never met before to be like, I really want to help you start this. And that just kept happening. And the people that form our staff now really are mainly a collection of strangers that just really wanted a Fringe for Chicago.
Yeah.
And I think that really strengthened our organization by so much, as opposed to it being, you know, a central figure with friends they had cajoled into doing this work, because it's just been a massive undertaking.
When you think about how many shows are brought in?
We have 50 different performance groups that come in from all over the U.S. and the world in some cases, and they perform a total of about 200 performances over the course of 2 weeks.
Because, you know, I had the opportunity, we had talked a little earlier, to go to the New York Fringe Festival with an original piece that Cody Daigle had written and that he had accepted into that. And I was the administrative person, you know, behind the scenes person. And I was so impressed. And I made sure I went and I talked with the director of the New York Fringe of that, how many people were in for that as performers and companies. And people were so – they were very organized, number one, and very kind and very nice.
Mm-hmm.
As busy – and I always look to that director – that as busy as she was, I mean, I know how busy that woman had to be. I know I wasn't the only one that she took 10 minutes out to just really sit and answer some questions, and you know, which is a very difficult thing to do. But it was a really interesting, you know, experience.
It's a labor of love.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I think what I really love about Fringes is there's this true democracy about it. Most Fringes, you either just kind of apply and you get in. Or there's a lottery. Like, Chicago Fringe is a lottery, which is very shocking to people because they're like, it's not curated? Like, you can't control for the content? And I'm like, I don't want to control for the content.
Mm.
And what's amazing is that you can even take a curated festival and a non-curated festival, and the end result is pretty much the same. But Fringe is great because it's a platform for people that are just starting out, you know, just wanting to try it. And we've had multiple artists like that do one-person show. They've always kind of wanted to do it, and they come out and they have a wonderful time, and they learn, and they network, and, you know, and what I also love about the non-curated model is that the shows that end up being really popular are the shows that all the people going to see the shows are like, hey, man, did you see this show? Like, this show was so crazy. Those two guys at Brooklyn doing that, like, Brechtian duel thing. That was one of our shows last year. And that's what I love. It really empowers the audience. Like, their opinion is what is going to make a show successful, not what me or what some other person thinks.
Huh, interesting. Well, hats off to you, because that was a big undertaking. And you're still involved.
Yeah,
you still are on the board, and you still are very active in the organization of it.
Yes, I do artist relations. So I answer the artist questions and help them and give them their schedules and help them with all their arrangements and housing and things like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. I would think something like that, it's kind of a big adrenaline rush too, you know?
I mean, well, I don't think the first year when we pulled it off, that closing night when we were standing there and, the other great thing is that we give 100% of the ticket sales back to the artists. So as executive director, when I was able to step on stage and say, you know, this year we returned, I'm trying to remember what it was in that year, about $25,000 to the artists, to say that and look at that group of people. And it was just kind of like, wow, we did it.
Especially in theater.
We did it. Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a big deal in theater.
Yeah, it is.
Wow, very nice. We're going to take a short break here, but we're going to listen to Stephen also comes in with some music.
Yeah.
That he has done. And,
this track, actually, an old friend, Putnam Smith, that I worked with up at Maine Shakespeare, we'd kept in touch. He came down. We played a few gigs together, and I wrote the lyrics, and he wrote the music for this, and we slapped it together in my living room. This was probably, I guess, 07. It's been a little while.
Oh, you know what I thought you said? When I was 7.
Yeah, oh, no, 07, 2007.
And this is called Yeah, You're Right.
Yeah, You're Right.
All right.
Sweet old lady. Yeah, she's still a rolling. Crescent has changed. It's all gold. Water did rise, but it's done gone. Music still rolls till the break of dawn. New Orleans, you still my lady. Got your scars, but you still my baby. Arms wide open, you take me in. Titillate my soul to any static end. Yeah. I've seen your face, met Katrina. Yeah, them rebuilding rings, lost a little weight. Yeah, but none of your style can get you out my head. I love you a long while. New Orleans, you still my lady. Got your scars, but you still my baby. Arms wide open, you take me in. Titillate my soul to an ecstatic. Hey, Nollins, yeah, you right. Hey, Nollins, keep your head up high. Hey, Nollins, use my morning dove. Might lie with other cities, baby, but he's the one I love. Yeah, your roofs might have some of them shingles gone. People uprooting. Yeah, some roll on. You know that people said you'd never come back. Laissez le bon temps rouler. And where you at? New Orleans. Yeah, you still my lady. Got your scars, but you still my baby. Arms wide open, you let me in. Titillate my soul, then ecstatic again.
That was Stephen Cooper on vocals and Putnam Smith. That was Yeah, You're Right. If you're just joining us, this is The Exchange on KRVS 88.7 FM or on the web at krvs.org. Please check out the website. Great place to find out what's going on in the news internationally, nationally, and locally. Also, a great place to find out what's going on in the area. Check out the podcasts if you missed your favorite show or just want to hear it again. And also, we have a very secure website. And we are listener-supported, so please think about continuing to help us support a lot of the local programs and the national programs we bring in. My guests today, if you're just joining us, are Stephen Cooper and Sarah Michaela Brown, and we've been talking quite a bit about their involvement in theater. And I have a question, actually. This is totally off the – as a woman.
All right. I love those questions.
Yeah, but this is a pretty simple
yeah.
one.
Probably. Oh, okay.
How did you – yeah, don't, it's not going to get too deep. Okay. But I'm curious about are you fine with being referred to as an actor?
Oh, okay.
Versus an actress. No, I've always been curious about that.
When I refer to myself, I call myself an actor.
Yeah.
But I don't – I'm not bothered if someone calls me an actress.
Yeah.
I just choose to personally call myself an actor. I don't know if I really thought about it that hard. It just feels right.
I thought about that today.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, shoot. I think I called her an actor. And should I have said?
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
didn't notice. Fine. Yeah, it's fine.
All right. We're done with that. Wasn't too deep.
Oh, man. That's too bad.
We'll get into something. Though. We'll get into something in a little bit. Stephen, I want to come back to you, though, talking about that piece. Music is something that do you spend time on it now?
Since summertime has rolled around, I've been playing a lot more on the guitar.
Because of school being out?
Having the time. Well, and also not being involved in anything else. I find I can only focus on one medium at a time.
Yeah.
When I'm acting, I'm acting. Whenever I'm writing, I'm writing. At the moment, I'm really not writing on too much or acting in anything, so I've been playing guitar.
Yeah. Do you write when you sit down to write? Is it generally with a purpose, or do you sometimes just feel like I want to sit down with pen to paper?
I'm a very lazy writer. At the moment, I have like 3 full-length plays that are like 3/4 of the way done. I'm really good on the start and the build. It's the close that I always have trouble getting through. If I did take the time to write daily and to make it a habit, I would probably pump out a lot more. I do have a tendency to sit back and let ideas marinate.
Yeah.
I've got a novel I've been working on for the last 12 years that I can see the whole story. I just got to sit down and write the thing.
Yeah.
I've only got about 80 pages down now. And that's
you know,
not
like
a novel makes.
With the plays, though, will you or have you ever, or would you consider just then passing it on to somebody else to finish?
Well, I don't know. I had never thought about just passing it to somebody else to finish. No, I don't think I would do that. They're my babies. I need to birth my babies. Now the idea of like somebody that I respect enough to give one of my babies to allow them to have their way with the production.
Yeah.
That is something I would like to have the experience of doing. I've always – the things that I've written and produced, I've always written and produced myself. I've never had the experience of passing on a script. Well, I did pass on one short play that was done up in Boston. I didn't get to see the production.
Yeah.
That was the only time I've had other people do one of my plays.
Because, I mean, you see that a lot with different songwriters, you know, that they'll then go into a collaboration to have somebody finish it or tweak it or, fill in the middle sometimes.
Yeah. No, I mean, I would be excited about a collaboration. The idea of just giving my baby away and not having any say in what happens to her would frighten me a little bit in the creation.
Female. Yeah, that's a whole different thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's my baby. I got to take care of her.
I understand.
Yeah, no, I wasn't thinking of you just giving it away totally. I mean, that would be one way.
Yeah.
But that you pull somebody
in. No, I would be very interested
in
a collaboration.
If the opportunity
ever arose, I would be very open to that.
And if that's the only way it's going to happen.
Then, it's always a collaboration, even in the ones that I have produced. I found very early on into producing my work, and I've put, I guess, 4 or 5 of my plays up, is if you give the actors room to move and you trust them, they will answer the questions that you didn't answer, come up with the punchlines that you may have missed, clean up the dialogue. So I'm very open to the collaboration of theater and the idea of creating original work, of giving the actors room to move and be co-creators in the project. So it would be interesting to sit down as a writer and co-create.
Yeah. You have recently, too, you've been involved in doing some film work.
Yeah, I have done a little bit. I've been doing about one a year.
Yeah.
we actually did a little short film up in Shreveport called Evolve that's a part of the Louisiana Film Prize.
Ah.
Which is what? What is the movie?
It was financed through the Louisiana. It was like a grant or a prize that was.
Well, no, the Louisiana Film Prize is it's a competition that in like the films that they can only be 15 minutes long. They have to be shot in Shreveport, Bossier.
Ah.
And then it goes into a competition where it wheedles down that the last 5 get The last five standing get bids into a lot of film festivals, and whoever wins first place gets a $50,000 grand prize.
That's nice.
Yeah, they've had production companies from all over the South and around up in there.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I'm still waiting to see that one. So
That was a particular piece that you went to audition for, or you knew somebody?
Katrin Schmidt was kind enough to put me in touch with the people that were producing it, that she had been put in touch with them. I forget from who. I went and read for them, and they cast me. And they cast Katrin also, and also Aaron Chasson's in that.
Oh, Aaron is too.
Yeah, they actually ended up casting an old buddy of mine from college, Greg Washington, is in it also, and another old buddy from college. I got him on set helping out with sound, so we had a little reunion up there too. It was kind of fun.
So what's the difference with you in your preparation work for film versus theater? What's the difference that you see, or is there a difference?
Preparation, I don't find as much of a difference for me as an actor in the preparation. It's in the process of doing. Film is very fun in the fact that you don't have to push to the back wall.
Can you explain that to people?
Yes, I can. Like if you're playing a 2,000-seat proscenium stage, you've got to play it broad enough so the people sitting in the back row pick up on what you're doing, that a small, subtle facial movement won't sell in a space that big.
Yeah.
With film, you don't have to act. You just get to be. And you don't have to push anything. And if you do push anything, it reads as false. I find film rather fascinating. I haven't done too much of it. I'm intrigued in doing more. Actually, in the process now with some of the Wanderlust people, we're playing with we're making a puppet movie.
Very cool.
Yes, which
it's a talented group.
Here very soon. Yeah, Brady and Elsa are building the puppets, and Duncan is going to be designing miniature sets along with Duncan Thistlewaite, and Penny Daniels is going to be helping in on that. And I'm going to jump in and. So we're trying to learn how to make little films too. I've got a few other people that know what they're doing that have agreed to jump in and play. None of us know what we're doing making films, so we're getting some people that do to come in and
What a great learning process, though.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun.
Have you been involved in film at all?
I haven't, not a single time. I'm curious about it. No, I guess I'm a straight stage actor. And doing the improv thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about the difference between being an actor on a theater production versus improv.
Oh, it feels completely different for me.
Yeah.
You know, even though my acting skills do serve me as an improviser, it just feels different. I mean, with a theater production, it's, you know, just such a long process. You know, putting it together with everyone, the sets, the costumes, and, you know, I also delve really so much deeper into my characters because you have time to do that. And I really think a lot about my characters and have their histories. And it's a very rich, very full experience. Improv is – I love improv, but just for different reasons.
For what?
Having done improv for so long now, I feel like I'm getting into a sweet spot with it, because the whole thing about improv that makes it so difficult for so long when you're first trying to do it is getting out of your head, you would say. Because you're standing there on stage and part of you is freaking out, being like, I have to say something. I have to be funny. I have to entertain these people.
Yeah.
You know, and then when you get past that point where you just feel confident.
Without having one single thing rehearsed.
Yeah, when we do improv, nothing is planned. We get up and we do it. But it creates some really interesting things that happen. You know, there's this synergy that happens between the audience and us, because the audience is providing suggestions. Their laughter is fueling it. It's a one-time experience that's only going to happen in that room at that time on that date, and it will never happen again. You know, and just seeing what bubbles up and what happens. You know, it could be current events. It could be what's going on in our lives. And just kind of this – it's almost like a meditative flow experience. And I love it.
What makes a good improv group? You know, what elements have to be there with – what do the people have to bring to it?
Well, I think that trust is important. Actually, they have a really important improv theorist called Del Close, that we use a quote from him in Silverbacks right before we're about to go on stage, and we tell each other, you are a poet, an artist, and a genius.
Hmm.
You know, we have that trust and that faith in each other. You know, I can go on stage with any member of my troupe and just feel safe and like, you know, they're not going to abandon me and run off stage. They're not going to, you know, completely come out with something that I'm not going for. They're going to understand me. And so because we've been working together with this particular group of people for so long, and we're only going to get better because you start to understand the other people and the way their brain works. You understand their cues and, you know, just that's what makes a good improv troupe is, I think, just trust and time working together and love of improv. I mean, we're improv geeks.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you have people that sometimes get into improv just because they really want to be funny and really want to, like, be in the spotlight. But that's not what improv is about.
Yeah.
No. It's really about the team and the group. It's about the other person more than it's about yourself.
Yeah.
It's about listening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and as long as we're talking about trust, you know, Stephen, something else that you're involved with as a teaching artist too is with fight choreography.
Mm-hmm.
And explain a bit about what that is.
What that is any fighting, whether it be with weapons or, you know, or just with the fist that you see in film or on theater is – choreographed, much like a dance that you start very slow under jello to get it in your muscle memory. Then you pick it up to speed to sell the illusion of violence, with the golden rule being safety for the partner.
Yeah.
So as actors, as combatants, you're up there selling the violence. As combatants, you're up there doing it safely and proficiently.
Yeah,
is the idea.
Did you go to a school for that, or did you go workshops that you did?
I was very lucky that whenever I was at Northwestern State, Mark Gwynn, that runs the department at Louisiana Tech, who is he's highly involved with the Society of American Fight Directors.
Okay.
He came down and we had a class that one of the professors at Northwestern State taught us throughout the week. And then on Saturdays and Sundays, Mark would come down and we'd do 8 hours with him, where it was physically grueling, where we learned unarmed rapier, dagger, and quarterstaff.
Yeah.
And we got adjudicated and recognized by the Society of American Fight Directors.
Nothing improv about when that has to happen.
No.
Really?
No, not really. It's all pretty set and structured. Now, before that, my first introduction to fight choreography was working a summer stock job called Tecumseh up in Ohio, which is about the Indian Tecumseh. It's this big natural outdoor amphitheater, like a 2,000-seat house with pond on stage and 12 horses in the show. And the big battle sequences, you've got like 40 guys on stage and half-stick dynamite cannons going off up on the top of the hill and like quarter-stick dynamite reciprocals going off on stage.
Yeah.
And I had never done any combat. And Ray Budd, I remember his name, he's this big burly man with a big red beard. And he gives us like 10 minutes, like, this is how you punch somebody. Here's a rifle. This is how you hit somebody with a rifle. Now go and give me a fight. And I was lucky enough to be teamed up with Tony Arie taught me. He was from Northwestern State also, and he helped me with the choreography on the first one.
Yeah, because with things like that, I mean, on stage, there's no cut, redo.
Well, no, and also with that, you've got 40 guys swinging weapons around you.
Yeah.
You have your fight space that you stay within. You have like, you know, there's going to be a quarter stick of dynamite going off over here, so don't be there whenever that goes off.
Yeah.
And it was great because when we played it right, like that, you know, the reciprocal would go off and like the sand would come flying and we could react and fly back from that. It was great fun. But that was my introduction into stage combat. And then from there, after we got trained at Northwestern State, me and a friend of mine would choreograph a fight each semester for the fine arts class. So we'd pick a different weapon each semester. And that's kind of when I started doing choreography, was working with Hector and coming up with fights. And then I kind of just talked my way into a job where I got hired as a fight choreographer and then had that moment of like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm going to have to figure this out. And
then
I talked my way into teaching stage combat. And then I was like, I'm going to have to figure this out.
Yeah,
and,
but my guess is you knew more than you thought you did. I mean, that's when you find out how much you know.
Well, I mean, I will be honest that I have worked with exceptional fight choreographers in my day. I am not an exceptional fight choreographer. I'm humble enough to admit. I feel like I am a better combatant than I am a fight choreographer. But I do feel like I have gotten to a point with my fight choreography that I'm proud of the work that I do. And I feel like I put good work out there.
Yeah.
I often tell people if you're looking for martial arts, go somewhere else. I'm more of your bar brawling, sword wielding kind of game.
That's right.
That's what I can bring to the table.
Well, if you're just joining us, my guests today on The Exchange are Stephen Cooper and Sarah Michaela Brown, and we've been doing a lot of talking about theater, improv, a lot of different things in the arts, teaching. I would like to hear from the two of you, you know, to talk about this came up in a couple conversations recently, but the state of theater in the Acadiana area right now, and I don't mean just in Lafayette, but the whole surrounding area, they're just – I'm finding it incredibly exciting what's happening. And I guess I'm curious, you know, you returning, you know, back home.
Yeah, and that's one of the motivation – one of the motivating factors to come back to Lafayette. When I left Lafayette in 2004, I mean, the scene that we have now is very different. I mean,
we kind of tagged out. I moved to town very shortly before you left.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I continue. Yeah, Amy and Acting Up.
The two of you were in that company together.
The production of Twelfth Night, that was years ago. Mm-hmm. I guess that probably was like 2004.
Yeah, that's actually how I ended up in town. Right. I came to see y'all, and then y'all needed somebody to cover Sir Andrew, and I picked up a script and was on stage with y'all the next week, and that's when I found a place to live and a job.
And you never left.
And I was here from there on.
Interesting. Yeah.
Now, and we definitely had interesting theater going on back then. I definitely don't mean to imply otherwise, but it was just not as much, I guess.
Yeah, and that's what I'm seeing.
Yeah. I mean, the quantity has increased by a great deal, and people are taking a lot of risks, and a lot of new people here, and that's good, and some people that are talented are sticking around.
Whenever I first came here, at that point, I felt like there was artistically a wave that was building in this town.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I figured I'd hang out until the wave crested, and then I'd float on, and it just keeps growing.
Yeah,
more people keep moving to town. More people keep coming back.
Yeah.
Like, everybody in the community was very excited when we found out you were coming back, Sarah.
Oh.
It's
Thank you.
You know,
it's a force.
Mm-hmm.
Because more theater is, I think, better theater. I mean, with any arts, you know, the more you have something.
Well, the thing we have with theater that, like, is exciting about the community growing and the community becoming stronger and not necessarily like one company growing and becoming stronger is that it really is a community. And the thing that we have is as theater artists, pretty much everywhere, but especially in this town, you find that it's very easy to get people to go hear a band. It's very easy to get people to come down for art walk and to see art. It is often a challenge to get people to walk in the door of a theater.
That's right. Because,
you know, a lot of people have been burned with going to see a bad show here or there. The beauty of what's going on in Lafayette right now is there is so much good theater happening in Lafayette, I can't catch it all, which
–
See,
absolutely.
I agree with you on that.
Yeah.
That there is so much going on. And when you think about all the different theaters and all the small towns around here too, it's just like, oh my gosh.
I know. It's amazing. You can't see all the – it used to be that you could see every play that came out. I mean, that's just simply impossible now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. And the quality of work has grown, I've found.
I agree.
And
I don't know if people realize the level of professional level theater that we have here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd love to, and I think we will eventually find ways to cultivate more theater patrons, you know, because people, I guess, just don't grow up going to the theater, or they just kind of think of it as this, you know, kind of stuck up hoity-toity thing that they don't want
to
do.
Yeah, it was like a highbrow thing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, I never saw a play until I was 19 years old.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it wasn't something that I didn't have the opportunities were there, I guess, if I would have searched them out, but it just wasn't something that I did.
Yeah.
I'd run to a bar and catch a band at the drop of a hat.
Well, there's something that is there's something a little bit intimidating. You know, I think back to when I was younger and, you know, I never saw a play. I mean, it's horrible to say, but I never saw a play till I was probably about 24, 25. Mm-hmm. And there's something a little bit intimidating about it because I think of some of those misnomers. You know, it says highbrow. It's am I going to understand it? Am I going
to be bored?
Am I going to be bored?
Some people
all
think
kinds
that.
Of things. Yeah. You know,
or walking into, going into a small space where like the actors are there like as far away as I am from you right now.
Yeah.
It can
mm-hmm.
be kind of intimidating. Of mm-hmm.
And which actually is very exciting once you start going.
It is. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it is. It is. So, you know, the question came up. Jody Powell was on recently, and she brought up the concern of, you know, how do we start getting our theater artists, you know, paid?
Uh-huh.
You know, so that's a paid thing in this area. And
yep.
That's a difficult question.
That is a difficult question,
yeah,
you know?
In theater, the paying gigs around this town are very few and far between.
Yeah.
Part of that is the companies are trying to find ways of keeping their head above water.
Mm-hmm.
And something that, you know, I've noted, I know we've talked about it and it's come up in conversations with other theater artists. When I go to see a play and like 60% of the people in the house are theater people, we need to figure out how to get other people other than just us coming, which
yeah.
I'm
we
starting
also,
to see that grow.
And, you know, let me just preface this by saying I'm not volunteering.
Yes.
But we need to get smarter about fundraising, too, in our
yes,
companies. We need
really
to strengthen
do.
Those arts administration aspects of those companies. And, you know, that will come as we grow and we can learn from each other. That will help a lot. And it needs to move up in the priority chain. You know, something when you talk about community theater, which is an important thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, in community theater, the people come in, you know, they have their job. They don't consider themselves actors as a profession.
Mm-hmm.
They come in, they have fun. They do popular shows. Their friends come and that there's like such a need for that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But what we have now is a burgeoning professional theater scene.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like myself, I consider myself a professional actress. And I mean, I think it's going to be up to the companies and also us as actors to have a shift where we're saying, no, I'm a professional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, even if you're giving me a $20 bill after this process,
yeah.
you know, and not, I don't want to like, obviously these are the people that run theater companies are our friends and our colleagues. So
yeah,
I'm not
sure.
like
yeah, yeah.
saying anything, but I just think we all need to have a mental shift about it.
Yeah. That it's the intention behind mm-hmm. it. I mean, when I've produced in the past, like I always give, I mean, you know, a percentage of what we make, which in what we make on theater, like if you can produce a show and come out ahead,
yeah,
you're doing a great job.
Yes.
It's quite an investment when you start looking at, you know, costumes, at set pieces, even sound cues, you know, I mean, there's a lot of free stuff you can find or create, but then, you know, I mean, I've spent $6 on a sound cue before just because I needed the right lightning, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's cost in everything.
You know, it's interesting. I really started, and I'm gonna bring up Cody Daigle one more time, but the way he described theater to me one time really had me looking at it differently, where he said, you know, theater is the one art that involves all the other arts.
This mm-hmm. is
and
true.
I had never thought about it in those terms, you know, that it involves – of course, theater and acting, mm-hmm. but it involves many times music, choreography, involves that with dance. It involves writing, mm-hmm. you know, creative writing.
It
also
takes
involves
a village.
The design. It does.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you start looking at it in terms of that, it's like, gosh, I can go to a show and I can take in, you know, this number of the arts that, you know, you're not going to all the time for another, you know?
It's a real magical thing. I mean, for me, I think a lot of that goes back to like in the beginning with it. I mean, it was, you know, it was the shamans as a way of like storytelling. It mm-hmm. was like the passing down of like of the story from generation to generation. There was a mystical, there was a magical quality to that, that when theater's done well, like mm-hmm. it's that magic is mm-hmm. real. That
That's
magic
right.
exists. When actors get up there and you forget that they're actors and you forget that you're sitting in a theater and you find yourself immersed in the moment, there really is a spell that's been cast,
there
and it's a magical moment.
There must be like a $20, a $10 word for that, right? Like when you are in theater in a particular production, then you just – everything's firing on all cylinders. And as an audience member, you just get that overwhelming just sense of aliveness,
uh-huh.
I think, and just like uh-huh. this sort of – this presence of like – being a human and the human experience, and it's all kind of coming down on you. I think that's what theater can do.
It is.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
that feeling where you don't want, as an attendee, you know, you don't want to get out of your seat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, my whole thing is then I want to sit down and I want to talk about it right away.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know, for certain plays where you get into that – that whole zone or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, that you're talking about is, okay, I really want to talk about what the heck was going on here, you know, and let's talk about that character.
That's where Bertolt Brecht said the play wasn't over till people were in the street talking about it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Yeah. And I'm curious, and we're getting short on time here, but Sarah, with being involved with a large organization like the Chicago Fringe, do these discussions take place with those groups? Like how, and I know that like the Chicago Fringe, you know, puts money back into the artists, but just mm-hmm. the people involved talk about, okay, how can we get the, you know, the day to day, the week to week companies making money?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's a major focus of what we do.
Yeah.
And the Acadiana Center for the Arts, which is my new employer as I've merged from PASA, you know, I think that's something that we're going to be thinking about and, you know, in that building, because, you know, part of our job is to cultivate, you know, the artistic community here. And mm-hmm. that's a question that should be on all of our minds. You know,
that's
I was just
right.
saying when we were on break, I mean, I think that this is just the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really
I agree.
Do. Yeah. I mean, who knows where we'll be 10 years from now?
Yeah. It'd be exciting to see.
It's come a long way. It's come a very – I'm creeping on 10 years in this town just to mm-hmm. look at where the scene has come. Like everything has just grown in this town, like music,
everything,
visual
yeah.
arts. But theater has come a very, very long way.
And yeah.
I'm excited about where it's heading.
Yeah.
It's,
I like
we've
that
got
we,
some exciting things
you know,
ahead.
Just in all the arts in this community, and theater, we're starting to see this more. We have a real excitement and investment about what's unique about what we have to say
mm-hmm.
as Lafayette,
yeah.
as Acadiana, as
yeah.
Opelousas. Like, we have an investment in that, it's,
yeah.
which I love.
And the amount of original stuff here
see,
is, like, absolutely mind-blowing. Like,
yeah.
the amount of
that's
people
important.
Writing
plays.
I think
plays it's very important.
And not only – I mean, I think it's just part of the culture here because
mm-hmm.
it's the same thing with music too. Like you
mm-hmm.
can name a genre and there's somebody out there playing original music
right.
in that genre.
And really good original
yeah,
music.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Like it's the biggest small town I've ever found in my life.
Yeah.
Like there is just something in the water here.
Yeah, because that goes across
good.
To the visual art, to the dancers. I mean, all
I agree.
Of that. You know, and you – and the writers.
They're just amazing artists in this town.
And then you think of culinary.
Yeah,
oh, no.
And then there's that.
And then there's that. Art.
Yes, indeed.
Well, Stephen Cooper and Sarah Michaela Brown, thank you so much
thank
for coming
you.
On
thank
today.
Thank you so much
it was
for
a
having
like,
me.
Thrill.
Yeah,
yeah,
I really
it really
appreciated
was.
You coming on. So we look forward to whatever is coming up in the near future. What do you have?
Yeah, we have Silverbacks performs once a month. Our next show is on the 17th.
At?
Theater
at
810.
At Theater 810.
Yes.
Right on Jefferson mm-hmm. Street.
It's very affordable.
Yeah.
we'll have that puppet movie together at some point.
We'll have that puppet
point.
Movie. And
yeah.
at some point we'll see the completion of your
yeah.
novel. And
well, and I am helping the Tea Sippers out with some fight choreography for
very
an adaptation
nice.
Of
the
Romeo
young group.
And Juliet. Yeah, a lot of them are students in our program. Some I've worked with before. Some I haven't. Some
very
that aren't
nice.
Students in our program. But yeah, all I just right. met with them yesterday. So that's coming up sometime in the near future.
All right. Well, everybody have a good week. We're going to go out with another one of Stephen's recorded at home pieces. We're going to put that out there for this one. This is Hobo Hootenanny. Have a good week, everybody.
Trey is a hoot. Got that whiskey to boot. Rolling on down the line. Me, Peanut, Charlie, Sylvester, he's here too. We got the canned beef stew. Eating it up cold. Warming up both our souls. But what are the poor people eating on?